Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
And hello out there, and welcome back to Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within the dialysis community. Now, last week, the panelists and I provided recommendations regarding communication skills that must be developed and implemented to achieve effective interactions with your healthcare team. We talked about the importance of repetition. When information given is not understood with clarity, you must use paper and pen. Document everything that your healthcare provider is saying. We also need for you to solicit support from a trusted friend or a family member if you have a language barrier. Today, we're going to set our goals high by talking about influential factors or conditions that confirm the diagnosis of chronic kidney disease and how you can slow down the progression of a terminal illness that has taken a life all of its own. Joining me today is our crew, the KIWK crew, okay? Kicking It with Kidneys crew. We have Maria Jimenez. We have Marianne Wilson. We have Rita Williams, Serena Scarborough, and BJ Simone. So BJ, what is the word on the street?
Well, Cindy, as our regular listeners know, each week we ask our dialysis patients to give us their opinion and their experience on topics that are important to the dialysis community. However, this week, our question was a little more difficult for them to answer. And that lets us know that this topic is extremely important and vital to review. And that is, how much information do they understand about their test results and about their treatment options?
Okay. Well, Serena, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful, Ms. Barclay.
I miss you, you and Marion, but I miss you more so because you have the numbers. Now, Marion just always takes her sabbaticals, but that was unlike you.
Well, Ms. Barclay, you know, all I can say is I'm reminded of an old joke where three men died and went to hell and put out the fire. So I don't know what happened last week, but seems like you messed up these numbers and put out fire.
Oh, so, excuse me? What are you saying?
I'm saying that there was a problem with these numbers, and all I know is that, you know, my phone blew up and people were confused. You created some confusion.
Well, what numbers are you specifically speaking of since you were absent?
Well, everybody deserves a little right to a vacation. Ain't that right, Miss Marion?
Unmuted, yes.
Yeah. So we were talking about the ethnicity of physicians in the nephrology industry. And basically... Okay. In the segment prior to, the question was, do you choose a physician based on ethnicity? What were the questions? And so we followed up with a breakdown of those numbers. And what we found was that in the nephrology industry, you had 56% Anglo, 17%.
Okay, Serena, first of all, I'm going to let you go over this, but I wasn't only talking about nephrology. That was a rundown of how many physicians we have in the United States. But I'm going to let you do your thing. Okay, that's total in the United States. But you go ahead. You go right ahead.
And I'm going to go right along with that. And okay. So you have 56% of the physicians who are Anglo, 17% that are Asian, 5.8% that are Hispanic, and 5% that are African American, and 0.30% that are Native American. And you know, this always unknown variable, which represents 15.7% in this scenario, is kind of like when they say in your household, you have 3.2. So I don't know what a 0.2 kid, I've never come to that reality, but you know, yeah, you need to choke on that. But the bottom line on this is if people want to be a part of physician groups and physicians that look like them, there's a great disparity. And I think that from what I can ascertain from last week's episode, there was a lot of confusion about these numbers. But the bottom line is we've got to put a larger, diverse population into the medical field.
So what do you, how are we going to do that? I think your numbers for, what were your numbers for Latinos and African-Americans again? And Native Americans, what were the numbers again? One doctor per what?
For Latinos, it was one per every 1,250 million. For African-Americans, it was one per every 909 million. And for Native Americans, it was one for every 909 million Americans or Native Americans. And I don't think that we have that many Native Americans.
So we're going to go ahead and continue with our show, if that's okay with you, Ms. Scarborough. Is that okay with you?
Well, you said we have a lot of work to do. Well, I know the Freedom Riders of 2021 are on the bus today. And uh-huh. I would have been on that bus with them if you hadn't interrupted me with this particular episode. So when you say what kind of work, we have a lot of work to do, what kind of work are we doing?
Well, Sarita, I feel like we're doing the work here, so I'm going to continue and let somebody else talk. But let me just go ahead with this because I know you're going to have a lot to say.
Anyway, but are you going to ride on that bus?
The bus is gone. Hasn't it gone already?
Oh, you can meet him in Carolina.
Okay, well, I'm going to meet you. Anyway, with all of the confusing information available on the internet and other educational sources out there, people of color must equip themselves with facts, figures, and numbers that are specific for long-term viability and preservation, like that bus ride that Sarita was just talking about. The most common or best estimate used by medical doctors to estimate kidney injury is by looking at a substance called creatinine. Traditionally, we have two kidneys, and inside each kidney, there are millions of worker bees called glomeruli that filter out the rubbish that we put into our bodies 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, Marion and Maria, there are many factors that influence declining renal function. Explain EGFR and why is this lab so valuable that the World Health Organization has mandated that we draw EGFRs on all patients?
Well, it's very important because it provides very customized information, if you will. It's customized in terms of age, gender, serum creatinine, and so it really gives you specific information about the renal function of the individual. So
okay, another thing to add to that, which is interesting, is that they add race to that. So you've got their creatinine,
mm-hmm. yes, that is
and
part.
Also
yes.
race, mm-hmm. which is very interesting because, you know, African Americans are, you know, highest population of patients on dialysis, you know, followed by Latinos and Native Americans, but they include race in there. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of information that says that self-identified Black or African-American people have higher levels of creatinine in the body.
And why
now,
is that?
Now, is I was going to say, more than that, I am not a physician. I'm a registered nurse. So I'm still, you know, looking to see why that is. But on your lab work, when uh-huh. you're in that pre-renal phase, it says on there for African-American, EGFR African-American. And an EGFR for non-African American. But if you just kind of Google about why that is, there's a lot of chatter or talk about should the race be replaced? And if there's disparities with minorities.
Well, it can't be, Maria. It can't be because African Americans have more muscle mass than white folk and Asians. Okay. So you really can't. So I'm glad that the originators of this calculation, okay, has taken that into consideration because we have more muscle mass. So you can't just say that all is one and one is all.
But it's interesting. It's an interesting read, Ms. Barclay. It's a very interesting read. But the education piece of it for the estimated glomerular filtration rate, they look at your creatinine, which comes from, it's a waste product in your muscles. So that doesn't make sense for African Americans, age and race. So this is the number that will identify your renal function and the stages of your function. Remember the stage one through stage five. So this is the key.
All right. So we got to do a little education, you guys. Come on, help me out, Marion Wilson, because we're talking about the glomeruli. Let's talk about the glomeruli, because I think if we educate patients, then they will know what to ask their physician. Okay. So let's go into the glomeruli. And I say that there were millions of them. We have two kidneys. Can you guys give me more examples? You know, we got two kidneys and you got these glomeruli that are basically the function. They're doing the filters.
The filters.
Okay. They filter out the waste products. Okay. So basically creatinine, you know, medicine is not precise. So the doctors, that's why the EGFR is so important and why it's been mandated by the World Health Organization, because that's the best that they have. So when you're talking about renal failure, what is the calculation that is? Is it 60 milliliters per minute? Do you guys know?
That's 60
liters per minute.
Now, unfortunately, I depend on our good Spectra and Quest Labs for that information, Ms. Barclay. But there is a lot that does factor into the calculation of getting that. But I think it's most important that patients know to ask their nephrologist what their GFR is.
What were you about to say, Marion?
What the formula, 60 milliliters per minute per 1.73 meters squared.
Okay, so that's 60 milliliters per minute.
If it's less than 60.
If it's less than that. Okay. And that 60 milliliters per minute is the blood that's cleaned. The creatinine is cleaned out of your blood. So the creatinine is what Maria was talking about. So that creatinine that's cleaned out of your blood at 60 milliliters per minute is okay. It's when it gets below that. Okay.
60 or less.
60 or less. Okay. So I want patients to really understand what we're talking about here. So when you're talking to a doctor, you need to be concerned about your creatinine first. Okay, you guys, what are some of the other factors as to why, you know, how physicians come up with that? Because they don't only use that. That's a major part of it. But what other indicators, again, do they use when you're talking about renal failure? How do they diagnose you? I mean, what are the lab results that they look at? Because it's all a numbers game.
Well, you touched on the most important numbers. You mentioned the blood urea nitrogen. You mentioned the serum creatinine, and you mentioned the estimated GFR. So those are really your key lab values that will give information about the status of the kidneys, how well the kidneys are functioning.
Okay. Do doctors look at things like potassium?
You have to think about what else your kidney does. So they filter. So if you have your other chemistries that are in your blood that can be thrown off because your kidneys are not functioning. And those things would be like your potassium, you know, your phosphorus, you know, sodium, things like that. Your kidneys are filtering your blood, keeping things clean.
What about your blood count? You know, that hematocrit and hemoglobin.
Anemia as well, your hemoglobin count. Your chemistries will be not as on point for normal kidneys. So you'll see those numbers in your regular chemistries, your CBC, complete blood count, your numbers will be off. And this CMP, your complete metabolic panel, they'll see that in there as well.
So go ahead, Marion.
Well, I was going to just add that when I'm teaching a new patient about what's going on with them, one of the things, in addition to what information Maria just shared, I share with them that in addition to the kidneys being filtering units, the kidneys also produce hormones. And one of the hormones that is produced is erythropoietin. Okay. And so oftentimes they will come and a common complaint will be, I have no energy. I feel very tired. And when the lab report is received, one of the things that is noted for many is they are very anemic. And that's because, and what I share with the patient is that you're anemic because the kidney function is compromised. So the production of the erythropoietin is compromised, which means you're going to be more susceptible to anemia. And go on to explain how to address that and encourage them and help them understand that's a temporary situation because of all of the medicines that are currently available on the market to address that issue.
Okay, so let me give y'all an example.
Mm-hmm.
We have to deal with our people, minorities.
Mm-hmm.
Had a patient that came in 2016, was diagnosed, was getting there, but not quite there yet with, mm-hmm. with the lab report. Patient didn't show up till 2 years later. And by this time, there was no choice. The doctor had no choice. As if he or she would have complied with the doctor, mm-hmm. then they may have been able to save that kidney function.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask BJ this. BJ, why do people of color appear complacent with the realities of healthcare knowledge? I mean, what is the problem here? They don't follow through, don't want to go to the business, but then when they get sick, you know, from a financial perspective, I mean, it's costly, very costly. So why is it that people of color appear complacent?
There are reasons that patients may be a little hesitant or neglectful in healthcare, particularly in communities of color. And these are mostly functional reasons that usually involve finances. Some of our people on the street have even made comments to that extent. So the first one would be finances. Many people in communities of color don't have insurance at all, or they have inadequate insurance. And so if there is out-of-pocket expense or an additional copay, they may see this as a discretionary cost, or at best, they may see it as simply another way for the provider to get money that they don't have. The next thing is transportation. Many families have only one car, and that car is shared by multiple members of the family. And so they may have to rely on the convenience of others to get to doctor's appointments. If there's a schedule conflict because of work or school, then the appointment may not be seen as a priority. And even for those who have access to public transportation, they've often stated that this is unreliable and is often burdensome. Our next thing would be family responsibilities. If a patient is taking care of other family members, either providing childcare or they're taking care of someone who has special needs, then again, they may neglect their own health in order to provide care for their loved ones. Caregivers are notorious for missing their own doctor's appointments to make sure that the other family members are taken care of. And then finally, there's work. Because many members of our communities of colors don't work jobs where they have flexible schedules, or they can either set their own appointments. Scheduling doctor's appointments or keeping doctor's appointments may seem like it's more trouble than it's worth, particularly if they have to rely on a supervisor to determine the value of them missing time off. So there are reasons that are related to historical treatments and oppression of people of color, and that's reflected in their behaviors. So because of some of the reasons that I've just stated, there's more of a tendency for African Americans, and again, many people of color in general, to have this crisis management attitude toward healthcare. Medical attention is only pursued when everything else has failed or they have symptoms that are so severe that they don't have any other choice. And even when they seek medical attention, that's usually done in an emergency room setting where they're treated as an acute case. And generally, they're told to follow up with their primary care provider, which, of course, the follow-up never does occur. Because of the long-term disparity in healthcare, many minority communities may not have the same level of trust and confidence as their white counterparts. In his book, Brainwashed, Tom Burrell addresses the occurrence of neglect in the healthcare by Blacks much more than whites. And he identifies some of the same reasons we've discussed, but he adds the problem of self-devaluation. He writes, and I'll read this, "Since we have been historically devalued, we devalue ourselves and our health." He then goes on to describe in much more detail examples such as minorities refusing to acknowledge a health problem or deliberately engaging in poor diet and addictions, as well as other risky behaviors. He says that this is a reflection of untreated trauma and depression, and he calls this a slow suicide dynamic. There's so many other things that we could discuss as it relates to health disparity, and particularly the instance of minorities neglecting their health care. And we will post a link to his book and other studies related to this topic so that people can educate themselves about historical health disparities, as well as get some really concrete information on what they can do to combat this today.
All right, so Rita, can you give me some examples of what are some of the initiatives that you have observed within the Latino community to employ better health practices? Because we seem to have a deficit with minorities following up and following through. But when we get in trouble, then it's everybody's problem and everybody's, it's a financial burden to everyone.
Well, what I have seen a lot is the publications and communication with the Latino consumer. Companies such as hospital groups are spending millions and millions of dollars to try to enhance that relationship. A prime example is COVID and the COVID vaccine, where Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, you know, Walgreens, CVS were sending out these massive stuff in Spanish because they were wanting, first of all, to contribute and to inform the public about what was going on. And then, of course, coming in to test or coming in to get the vaccinations. So that was one thing. I've also seen a lot of Latino celebrities. We have like George Lopez and Selena Gomez that both are people that have received transplants. So they have really been speakers for the Latino community talking about the importance of going in and getting tested for hypertension, diabetes, and going to the doctor to see what's going on with you. Also, I've seen a lot of radio and television. Latinos, we love our radio and we love our television. Telemundo has been awesome in the Latino community, helping us with those health disparities. They've gotten assistance from celebrities. I watched a show the other day because I love me some Telemundo. I need to keep up with my Spanish. So I saw they were advocating for eating healthy, exercising, you know, going to the doctor, you know. We're not the best at going to the doctor because, like we've talked about in the past, we don't always have that insurance. But they were advocating for the use of the community health centers. So I've noticed things like that. It has been moving. I think COVID has helped a lot as well.
Yeah, but Rita, when you look at it now, COVID, when you talk about COVID, there was a whole lot of money.
Yes.
COVID. So there were some incentives there for people to push for that.
Yeah.
We don't see that in renal failure, you know?
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, but the government basically is not there long-term. I mean, of course, they're going to support. They pay for dialysis and things of that nature. But the push in our communities is not as prominent as it should be.
Well, and that's something, it's a work in progress. We need to get on the Freedom Rider train and make sure that we're all pushing for this. I mean, it's part of the education, and we've talked about that. I know, and it sounds like a broken record, like I'm preaching to the choir, but it is educating our communities and getting the word out. I mean, who's going to help us if we don't help ourselves?
Well, Sarita, from an economic point of view, you know, African-Americans and Latinos, you know, we used to have our own communities. And I know BJ always says that, oh, it doesn't do any good as far as that we cannot be segregated. And I'm not trying to segregate us, but I just know coming up as a child, there was no Rosewood or what was the other place in Oklahoma, Sarita? What was the name of that?
The Wall Street, Black Wall Street, Tulsa. Right.
But each community had their own Wall Street in that. I had examples of people that were leaders, okay? And we did well. How do we get back to that? Because, you know, with all this stuff that's going on in the world today, we really need to get a handle on this and help ourselves, because we really can't depend on anyone else to help us. What is your recommendation? I'm talking about finance, okay? We're talking money. So what is your recommendation?
Well, I think it's quite simple. I think successful people need to start giving back. And not through conversation, but through finances. Not necessarily relying on the church, but developing programs that are at the ground level. And it's what Rita talked about when she mentioned George Lopez, but how much has George Lopez done in the community to walk around and say, this is what caused my renal failure. This is, and they're not giving back. Alonzo Mourning didn't do it. Natalie Cole didn't do it. Gary Coleman didn't do it. I mean, the list is continuous. Yeah, but, you know, what happens is we see people that make the money and then they turn around and they go live their life. They're not putting or reinvesting back into the communities. And so why do communities fail? They fail because people are putting it back. If their version of putting it back is going and getting the hottest new Range Rover, that doesn't help our community. And so when you see these people on the Freedom Bus, they're riding because they believe in a system and they're willing to take time. And I know BJ's not on the line right now, but they're willing to take time to get on a bus with however many other people and drive a ride from Arizona to Washington. That's their time. And they're not getting paid to do that. And so sometimes we have to make an investment that's bigger than our self-interest. And that's what happens. Most of the people who have the money to put back into the community choose not to spend it there. And so until there's a new psyche in that, it's not going to change.
Well, do you have any recommendations as how we can reinstitute that mental strength that we had that no longer exists?
Sure. You can hire small companies, both in the Latin, Indian, and African-American communities to reach out to the constituency with a planned marketing strategy to educate about those things.
Well, I think that's very challenging, and it's
Why
very devastating.
Why do you consider that challenging?
Well, because Sarita, you know how it is. I mean, again, I think everybody's worried about 2045. I think that's what this is all about. When you have one race that's dominant over another race, okay? But we need to get together, okay? And we don't seem to be able to do that. You've got churches on every corner, okay? And I take my hat off to those African-American doctors and Latino doctors, which are very few. It doesn't even look like the programs are there to even push our people, okay, into medical school so that they can be doctors. That support system is no longer there. How do we change that?
Well, I think you're talking about two or three different things there. And number one, what I would say is like the entire conversation that we've had today about the various labs and things of that nature, that needs to be formulated in a written document and just distributed to people. Because for a person like me who has no medical background, it's extremely confusing. And you, when you go into a physician's office and he's all about just clocking time for the purposes of saying that he saw you and billing onto your insurance company or to whatever system pays your medical bill, that's a problem. We don't have a basic understanding. I don't want to sound like I'm not of knowledge, but I can tell you that 90% of that portion of the conversation, I still don't know that I understand it any better. But I think the start of the other part of the conversation is you've got to get at the grassroots level. And if you don't know the people, and I'm to the point where I don't want to go through the churches, because the churches, to some extent, have been bought and sold as well.
It doesn't matter. They disfellowshipped you anyway, didn't they?
Well, yeah, they did.
Yeah, you disfellowship anyway, so it don't matter.
And I'm like Sarita. I think we do need to get back to grassroots. As a Latina, and when I do volunteer in the Latino community, I was out and about probably about 2 weeks ago, and they were doing a food drive. But also at the food drive, they were handing out flyers to get their sugar diabetes checked, high blood pressure checked. And, we were handing them out. We were talking to the patients and we're like, you need to come and get this. Oh, yeah, my mom has high blood pressure and I have sugar diabetes. I mean, are you taking care of it? Well, I don't always check it. I know it's high. The sugar is high. The sugar is high. But you're like, this is very important. I think it is getting back to grassroots. I think with so much that we've done, we've come so far. I think that sometimes it's just gone too far. I mean, I've seen programs where they're giving out, this opportunity and no one shows up.
Yeah. Okay. That's my exact point. Think about a basketball player. If you get an injury, a kidney injury is somewhat similar. If you're a basketball player and you get an injury, okay, that injury doesn't go away. Okay. Right. You have to keep follow up and you have to follow up and you have to keep working on it and keep going to see your doctor. But a lot of these patients are just missing in action, And then when you do hear from them, they're ready to go on dialysis.
Yeah.
And I think the issue with me is how do we stop the progression of renal failure? That's what we need to do, since there are so many minorities that are on these machines. Well, how do we stop that?
Go ahead, Mary.
I was going to say, I think it's very important to also consider the very important factor of finances. I want to go to the doctor, but if my financial situation doesn't support that, then I can't go to the doctor. And the other piece of that, oftentimes part of that slowing the progression process includes medications. So if I don't have the financial resources, I'm not going to be able to follow up with the physician. I'm not going to be able to purchase the medication. And so, as we all know, high blood pressure is the silent killer. I don't necessarily have symptoms. So I feel that everything is okay. So I think that's a big part of why the follow through isn't where it needs to be.
Don't we have health care for all here in the United States? We're in Texas and there's a hospital called LBJ. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, can't you go to LBJ?
You ever been over there?
Oh.
Yeah.
It does take a minute, but if you want your health care taken care of, you just sit and wait.
Right.
Our patients sometimes when they have to go to LBJ, they're like, well, the community hospital takes forever. I said, but it's either free or at a low cost that you can afford. And you can get, your checkup and your medication. You have to be patient. And I know patience is a virtue, but I mean, there is sometimes we have to take accountability too. I'm not playing the blame game, but we have to take accountability. I mean, if my dad was, you know, having high blood pressure and we couldn't afford it, trust me, we'd be sitting at LBJ mm-hmm. waiting patiently.
Right, because mm-hmm. once you go on dialysis, you're going to wait anyway. Depending,
you're going to be waiting for what, 3 to 4 hours anyway?
Yeah,
longer than that.
Oh yeah, longer than that.
You know, so I think that's what we're trying to teach here. But I think Serena, you had something that you were going to say.
Well, I think Marianne covered it, and she definitely did it more eloquently than I could have ever done it, because I was just kind of in disbelief when you compared the NBA to poor people. And so that's the start. Now, on this LBJ thing.
You know, I really did not miss you, but okay. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, on this LBJ initiative that we're now in the discussion of, the problem is, what do you do when you have a parent that's working, that's responsible for their kids, and what you're telling them to do is, well, you're going to wait anyway, but you go sit over there at LBJ and get your turn, get your free health care, and get your free prescriptions. What happens to that individual's job? And so I kind of take the counter narrative to what I'm hearing about, you know, and I think the county system should be just as good as any other medical system, regardless. I mean, healthcare is healthcare.
Now, we didn't say LBJ did provide good healthcare. They do provide good healthcare, I must say. And they have extended hours.
But they just make you wait.
Well, I mean, you have to wait. We waited our
primary position. They're busy. They're full.
Right. That's exactly right. They have so many
services. They're expanding. All community health is trying to expand and put community health centers in every quadrant of the cities and stuff. So, yeah, it is a waiting game, but either it's waiting a little while or not getting any help at all. I mean, I know, Sarita, it's a win.
A lot of people, and I'm saying, you know, devil's advocate or not, but people make mm-hmm. time for what they want to make mm-hmm. time for. And I do understand that there are certain barriers, you know, with work and things like that, but there's ways. You just mm-hmm. have to be, you know, you have to plan ahead if you can, you know, wait too late and then you won't be able to plan. Mm-hmm. But you have to make time for your health if you want to live.
Well, Maria, I want to live, and I have just now designated you as my nurse to take care of me, because I'm not going to the community facility to wait. So I'm going to be looking forward to you take care of me.
Okay. Serena, do you have some underlying issues that we don't know about, Serena?
Not as of yet. But again, if you're counting on me to look at the GFR and creatinine and all of that, I might be in need of a nurse. I used to know somebody named Florence Nightingale, but I don't know if she's still available.
Oh. Well, Serena, I agree with you, because all those things they were talking about, I was even trying to take notes and a little confused.
Okay, so y'all, I'm excited. I'm really excited about this. Okay, we have a guest coming on July 13th, a real medical doctor that's a nephrologist, and her name is Rapa MD, okay, is Dr. Mary Washington, and I'm excited. So we're going to be pumping this up, because she's going to be talking about how we as minorities can take accountability and slow down the progression of renal disease. Even from an economic view, Sarita, we are not, minorities are not the ones that are at the tables that are receiving revenue from all of this devastation that is around us. And I think it was very important what BJ says, because it's going to take more than a village to make some of these changes. Your analogy?
Well, Ms. Barclay, I didn't hear all the question. Can you repeat that, please?
Well, it really wasn't a question. It was just a follow-up comment. I mean, you know, you always have something to say to me, but it was just a follow-up comment. My question to you was that, all the money that's going through kidney disease and renal failure, there are not a lot of Black folks. We don't have a lot of them. Well, we got a lot of employment with our race, but we don't have entrepreneurs or people that are at the table like Marion, and myself, that basically can help navigate and direct traffic as to helping our people help themselves. Was that clear enough for you, Sarita?
Crystal.
Okay.
So what I would say is that what we have to do is use our creativity. And by that, even though we may not have the doctors in mm-hmm. position, what we did was we identified a series of support services necessary for individuals to receive the services that are provided by people like Marion. And mm-hmm. so it would be the simplest solution would be to start utilizing the services of minority businesses that can provide that. We identified lawyers. We identified pharmacists.
We got a problem with that. We got a problem with that because, you know, it's almost like we've been brainwashed to think that light is right and dark is wrong. So a lot of us even choose to, even though we're mm-hmm. advocating for more of us, but a lot of us choose to. We think that it's the care is better if the person is lighter. So how
I disagree with that because how would a patient know that the person providing the biomedical supplies is of one ethnicity or another? Those are things that are not seen from necessarily the front end. And so that's why in some instances, what you say is correct, but in many of the cases, do patients care what color the insurance man is? I don't think so.
Well, that was an analogy anyway. Okay, you guys, so we're gonna try to wrap this up. I'm excited about Rapper MD coming on July 13th. We're gonna have questions for her. She's gonna tell us how to reverse this process, okay? So I need your final thoughts. Mary, we gotta start with you. You've been missing for 2 weeks, so say something. So tell me something good, okay?
I want to encourage patients to get information. Information is going to propel you on a path of help. And so there's a wealth of information available at your fingertips. I just really want to encourage our patients to access the information so that they can have good health, good life.
And they can contact us on Kicking It With Kidneys as well, on the website, whatever. BJ, what do you have to say?
Okay, well, my final thoughts would be first, we perish for the lack of knowledge. We all have to be advocates for education, prevention, and quality health care for everyone.
Okay, Rita.
Very simple. Familia, go see your doctors. It's very important because things can sneak up on you when you don't expect it. So if you get told you have diabetes, you have high blood pressure, go see your doctor, do your follow-ups. I know nobody wants to wait, or you may have to ask people to give you a ride, but do it. It will pay off in the end.
That's wise counsel. Maria?
Just to piggyback off what Marion said about information, you know, a lot of times to the, you know, non-medical person, it doesn't make sense. But when you're learning something new, it doesn't always make sense the first time. So you have to keep staying at it, asking the right questions, and being involved.
Sarita?
Well, Ms. Barclay, I'm going to circle back around to your comments on the NBA. And I'm circling around specifically.
Y'all, you know what? Go ahead.
I'm circling around. I have just a small point to make.
Okay.
I am so proud of the Clippers, the Suns, my Atlanta Hawks, and the Milwaukee Bucks, because there are four teams that beat out all the teams that pack superstars. And so my message to the people is, even though we may not have the money, we may not have the power or the legislative or political influence, we can still win. And so as you enjoy the NBA playoffs, you know, go Hawks, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Well, this concludes our show. And we thank you so much for joining us. And be sure to join us next week on Kicking It With Kidneys.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week. The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.